to the Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. Typically, we talk to folks from all sorts of backgrounds and industries about money, mental health, relationships, the creative process itself, and more. For this season, we're trying something a little bit new and experimenting with theme seasons. And for this one, we're focusing on music, bands, artists, and industry folks. Big thanks to Desert Days Music Fest for helping make a lot of these interviews happen. Visit desertdays.org to check them out and to grab your tickets for the fest in the fall of this year. Also, thank you to Ton Starts Bandit for providing their song Wet Ass Morning as our intro and outro music, and to Hannah Spencer for doing all of our branding and design work. Hope you dig it. Hello. Holy cow. We made it to our 50th episode of The Process. Kind of can't believe it. Kind of can. Kind of feels like it's been more. I also have like 75 total or maybe more episodes recorded. So the fact that I'm publishing the 50th is a weird feeling, I guess. I don't know. It's good. I'm excited to have published 50 podcast episodes. I hope you are too. This is a special one. It's also kind of a unique one. Well, first of all, it's our last episode in partnership with Desert Days for this season, at least. They have been incredible to work with. They were incredible to work with. It was an incredible, I'm saying the word incredible a lot, opportunity. It was an incredible opportunity. Huge thanks to them and for making many of these episodes and interviews this past season happen, including this one with Beak. If you're not familiar with Beak, stop what you're doing. Stop listening to this. Go listen to them. You can find links in the show notes at theprocess.co to their music. They're also, wherever you listen to music. It's, just some of the best music out there and definitely one of the best live performances. So check them out. So Beak is Jeff Barrow, Will Young, and Billy Fuller. And so this interview was at a bar. It was after their sound check. And I don't get intimidated very often anymore, like ever for anything. But it does happen every now and then. I was a bit nervous for this interview. I think it kind of comes across. That's okay though, because I'm human and they're human and we're all human. So it's just a bunch of humans interacting. It was really great. And I truly appreciate how candid they were and just their honest sharing and their time. I had a great time talking to them. We talk about touring in the US as a UK band, their take on the impact of streaming on album sales, how they miss MySpace, the great things about Desert Days, the music scene in Bristol and London, misogyny in the music industry, their songwriting and recording process, and more. Big thanks to Billy, Jeff, and Will. I truly appreciate you sitting down with me over a pint. It was a good time. Thanks for listening. One more episode left of the season. Rick McGuire of Pile. Tune in next week. And then after that, it's a season. They're all about environment or all about making it in the Bay Area. We'll see. Subscribe. You'll be surprised. We'll all be surprised. Hope you dig it. See ya.
For the best.
That's exactly what you want, isn't it? Finish your profession.
Yeah. Well, the good news is I don't make any money from this. This is just for fun. So, yeah. Sweet. So, tour. Been interesting, it sounds like. One of you has a virus.
Two, maybe three.
Mr. Sniffles.
Mr. Sniffles. Yeah.
But regarding, apart from all that, it's been really good.
Yeah, the shows have been great.
Good. Yeah. So, and you played in San Francisco most recently?
Last night.
Atlantica? Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
And then before that, we played in Portland, and before that, we played in Seattle.
Is this, and Beak has played these cities before, right?
No. We have only played San Francisco and LA and New York.
Yeah, okay.
But apart from that, that was it. Oh, we did play Philadelphia.
Cool. How does touring work for Beak with all of your other projects, like in terms of making time and coordinating shit and in general?
It's a complete, well, it's not that is, you relate it to any of our other projects. It's just planning to come on tour to America as a UK band is a complete head fuck, because it's like very, very expensive, and there's so much red tape, it's ridiculous.
Time consuming.
There's no money to be made.
Unnecessary.
unnecessary. Nobody loves us. Nobody cares. But
it's not true.
It's not true. But I was just kind of but with all that, you know, you just do it whilst you're, you know, you get the kids off to school and then you start doing emails again, you know, and making phone calls. That's my other project.
Right.
I think that's the point. I think the idea that kind of Beak is a project band that has to come together to do stuff is actually a wrong, it's a bum steer, as we call it. It's actually not. It's actually a band. And we're kind of almost more of a band. So that's our thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other stuff is the kind of side projects.
Right.
So really, ultimately, we're in Beak first.
Yeah.
You know, or at least it's 50-50 with something else we do.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, you're in a band. So it's kind of a... You know, you plan it like any other band. You speak to your agent and you speak to the label and say, it'd be great if when you release a record to be able to do this tour. And that's what we do. It's actually no different from any other thing at all. You just put the time aside like you would with anything, you know.
Right. Which, by the way, I knew about Beak as a band before I realized any of you were in it. It wasn't like, so-and-so from such-and-such, has a band. It was like, I heard Beak's music.
That's
funny, like,
because that the whole kind of side project thing from this is a lot more prevalent in the States than it is in Europe.
Okay.
In Europe, we've worked for a long time, we've been together for a long time, and now we're just Beak.
Yeah.
The band, that's the guy from Beak, and that's the guy from Beak.
And we've also had enough arguments with journalists, sort of after 10 years, to get us to this point where people don't ask us anymore.
We're in America, it's that thing of like, we would like to book Beak into your venue. And they say, who the hell are Beak? And then they say, well, it's a guy from Portland, a guy who plays with Robert Plant, and a guy called Moon Gangs. And that's, and they go, sounds all right. And so that becomes the main focus.
Right.
Where in Europe, you just kind of, we've got Beak and they go, cool, or no.
Right.
Because we turn up at the venue and they're playing Massive Attack at Stereo.
Okay.
Yeah, which happens in, you just
sort that out.
But the thing is, you get people who just kind of totally get the wrong idea from us.
Right. I saw your tweet. We were just talking about Twitter.
I
saw your tweet about, like, we don't sound like Portishead or Massive Attack. Do you feel like
people
going to your shows expect that?
In America, because of the way the shows have been sold, yes.
Okay.
But the more time you come over here and people realise that if you like that music, you won't like us.
Right.
Then we'll just get on with it and find the true believers.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? It can only last for so long, selling it as that and people turning up and then saying, this isn't groundbreaking trip hop. I want my money back.
Yeah. Which we're totally cool with.
Right. Well, when I said projects, I meant more than just the other bands. You guys also, like, do film scoring and stuff, right?
Yeah, we did one for a couple and a whole. We do other things, you know.
I have a full-time job.
Yeah, one of the big things we talk about on this show is, like, how creatives make it work, how they sustain financially, creatively, like, how you pay, like, what pays the bills. And you mentioned, like, it's expensive to come here and to tour. Like, how do you guys do it? And why do you do it?
I mean, we've got a label. This is the first time we've had a label in America.
Okay.
Temporary Residence. And they've paid some money for us to come over and promote.
Okay.
Which is great, which was part of the deal. And then we did a gig just before we left in Sheffield that was a money gig, and that goes into the pot that will pay for the flight. So it's like anything.
That's it. We want to be here, and it's just a long time of sitting it down, juggling everything, and finding a way we can make it work, isn't it?
Yeah, because there's people here who want to hear us play live, so we're going to make it work, you know. And then when we get back home, and then we sit with all the paperwork and work out whether it's okay or not.
Yes. It generally
is a mystery.
It won't pay. Won't pay the mortgage.
Right. Right.
Excuse me, I'm just...
I also feel like experimental music is having maybe more of a, not mainstream, but a moment of sorts.
What's experimental music?
Music that's not mainstream. Like, that doesn't sound like everything else you hear. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. It's the internet to thank for that, I think, isn't it? Bandcamp, I mean... I think it's not specifically just Bandcamp. It's just, I know we see quite a few Bandcamp hits, and it just... makes things more accessible. It's not the 90s where maybe we might get a play on MTV 2 if we had a good video, and that's the only way someone would be able to find out about it.
No, but at the same time, though, you have to say that Fat Paul, who runs in Running Vader with me, he had a label called Swarfing, didn't he? And in the 90s, he could put out any old shit and it would sell 5,000 copies. And that's good.
Yeah.
And it would be 5,000 copies plus. Now, a band that are really good that puts out an album, you know, they might sell 600.
Right.
You know, the real bottom end and the bottom line of the band is that they sell 600 copies and then they go on tour. And because of Spotify, they cannot survive through this digital age if they're not on playlists. And they don't have a playlist manager, and they don't share cappuccinos over getting on
the playlist. Right, and Spotify can sit there and say that it doesn't matter what label you want, you're on or whatever, but I've been there, and the people go and they have meetings, and it's super frustrating. I actually used to have a music discovery platform that was like music from humans, not robots. There's 45 of us sending music to a bunch, 45 different groups of people, the genres that we made up. I used to write a lot about my issues with Spotify. That said, I use it.
Same, yeah. Slag it off, but still give them $9.99 a month.
Yeah.
We were talking yesterday about the absolute brilliance of MySpace.
Yeah.
And how we utterly miss it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Of course, it's such a good platform for bands at that level. And at any level, you know.
I think the discovery side of it, also what we were saying, just the way it operated and MySpace music, I mean, at least initially and for a long time, weren't separate. It's like a big social hub, mm-hmm. and you've got, you know, your top eight friends, four of them are your mates, four of them are your favourite bands, and just you're involved in it, you're in the same place as them. Other bands would, you know, like a bigger band would hear something they really like, whack it at the top of their MySpace page. You just introduced a load of people to something new.
It was natural curation. Right.
Yeah.
It was natural. It wasn't, they didn't have a manager.
Yeah.
It was like, so three bands that you like, both have got, all three of them have got this new band in their top nine friends. And you go, right, well, I'm going to check them out.
Yeah.
And then they've got this new band, have got like another band that they really like, and then you find that they're also on that one as well. And it's just a bit of detective work, and you actually use your brain to find music.
Yeah.
It's not like algorithms kind of like shot at you down a pipe.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And people, what would happen is you'd hear it and you'd go, oh wow, they're actually playing Bristol next week.
Mm.
I'll go and see them.
Yeah.
It was all in one place, though. That's what we were saying. So you'd see they're playing Bristol because it would be right up there next to their four tunes that they'd chosen for you to be able to instantly play and a photo of them.
But also, you'd see their artwork. They would their page up like they would. So it's kind of like, you know, if it was kind of like early kind of animated dancing cats, you just knew that they would just have the lap.
Yeah.
And if it was just like proper kind of like death metal kind of lettering everywhere, you know, black metal lettering. You just kind of, and that was what was cool. So you've got an aesthetic, you've got an idea of what bands would like straight away, instead of just hearing a thing on Spotify and going, oh.
And they did it, the bands were doing that stuff themselves, instead of like their labels, marketing coordinator.
Yeah, absolutely. 300 followers.
Nice.
I loved it. I mean, absolutely not.
Yeah, I was talking to someone recently, and she was saying how she could, like, write a little bit of HTML, and I was like, oh yeah, well, you're able to, like, make your MySpace page fancy.
Then
I realized that she was way younger than me and had no idea what I was talking about.
Watching you blankly.
Yep. Like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that alternative music, I mean, if you're in the pop arena, right, then basically you have got a place to go.
Yeah.
Like, you really have. There are methods to kind of get into that, the way to music. Ultimately, you want to sign to a major or a production company that want you to work with co-writers
and then
there's a whole science to it. Yeah, like how many beats need to be in your shit.
Yeah, you're sponsored by Bose, you're in Europe here, and then you have it all makes sense and it all works. If you're anyway in kind of experimental in the rock world, it's an absolute shit show. There's nothing that you can kind of really grab hold of, because the industry has basically said we don't want those people in charge of their own destiny. We those people are too difficult to deal with because they won't do what they say or we say. So they've literally squeezed that side of the industry out. So festivals. You used to go to a festival in the UK and you used to kind of get, I don't know, Beck, and then you'd have like maybe some kind of poppy kind of thing next to kind of something else. And now it's all pop. So basically you go to Reading Rock Festival and it's Post Malone. Do you know what I mean? And it's a load of kids all shouting. But because Post Malone is seen, is being sold to you as the alternative.
Right.
And tattooed face, giving it all that stuff. Kids think, yeah, well, he's the real deal.
Right.
And he is. I'm not saying he's not the real deal. You know, he sounds like a right now. But in a sense of like, you know, if you're underneath that, you're not going to. It's so difficult to survive.
Yeah, it is. I think that's one of the good things about Desert Days. At least they're like, they haven't sold out yet, which is cool. Love the lineup this year.
We don't know what it's like.
I've actually never been either. But I've heard great things. Their lineup every year is solid.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you compare it to kind of Coachella, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's totally.
Like Coachella is just literally about Instagram yourself.
Yeah.
Coachella.
I mean, like, Desert Days doesn't seem too far removed from, you know, things we had, like, back in the day, ATP or something, just get a cool venue and I'm just going to book a load of bands that I think are really wicked and put them, you know, the ATP festivals we had in the UK were in kind of crappy holiday
chalet resort
things, you know, where you'd go, just like the working class family holiday, weren't they, in the country, is what they were for, and just the brainwave of, because it's cheap,
right.
It's like we can charge a reasonable price and everyone at the festival can have chalets to stay in. It's already got enormous function rooms that are used in the summer and it would just be an amazing festival.
It's still good festivals in the UK though. I mean, it's just like they are struggling to keep hold of their roots, but there is like Green Man, End of the Road. There's loads in Europe, Best Kept Secret, one we played in Poland, Off.
Off's amazing.
We have got some great festivals in Europe that's still great, you know. 20,000 plus people. With really good bands, you know.
Yeah.
I think the European festivals, like the mainland Europe festivals, also benefit hugely from government arts funding. So they don't have to sell out because there's a funding there in the first place. So they just book.
Doesn't exist here.
Or in the UK. Absolutely non-existent there. Yeah.
What's the music scene in Bristol like?
I don't know, we're too old to comment. There's always loads of bands in Bristol. It's healthy, I think. I mean, like, you know, the Idols have been like a massive turnaround for Bristol. Do you know the Idols?
Uh-uh.
Right, well, the Idols are kind of most probably the biggest Bristol band since golden era supposed trip hop, right? So they are, aren't they? The biggest band to come out of Bristol for 20 odd years. And they're kind of like socially conscious punk band.
Cool.
They played The Echo last night, I think. They've been going around, they're coming tonight. And that's good. There's bands like Lice. There's loads of kind of like Young Echo, which is like kind of urban dub kind of like beat project, which is really heavy. And then you've just got like, lots of good people, traditional music, like reggae, rock bands, hardcore bands. You know, it's like, it's kind of like, you know, it would be like a miniature LA, really. It sounds like a long thing to say, but it's a miniature any town. You've always got kids doing stuff, you know.
Yeah.
There's enough good venues and, you know, they're struggling because of they're building new flats, apartments, and people are complaining about the sound and
but the government are now stepping in to save the venues.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is really, we never thought would happen, but they are doing that now.
Wow.
So if you're an established venue, you that apartment just has to deal with it and has to build better kind of, you know, soundproofing.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, it's a good town.
Cool.
We live there, we'll live in London.
But, London I've been to.
Yeah, London's a funny one. The London music scene.
It's not good, is it?
It's not good. No, it's just full of people. Hello. Yeah, full of people trying very hard.
Yeah.
To do the wrong things, really. Kind of the opposite of what Bristol has, where it does have a nice kind of independent, you know, people just doing stuff, good venues. London music scene has become very, let's get in a magazine.
Fans from London are a bit wealthy, really.
Obviously, not all of them. There's some brilliant music comes out of London, but yeah. You know, there's a lot of teenagers doing internships on their, you know, crust fund money.
Well, I mean, right. You've got the whole, kind of urban scene out of London, which is massive. That's much of the biggest success story. British music that has been for years.
But it was ruined instantly because it was London.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about this recently. Like, yeah, the grime scene that came out of South London is, you know, the biggest musical movement that's happened in the last couple of decades, I'd say. But that was a timing thing as well because it started before the internet. So it didn't... People didn't jump on it and try and sell it to everyone instantly. It had time to kind of fester and grow into a real thing.
Major industry tried to buy into it.
But they have now.
They have now, but they tried to buy into it. It didn't work for many years. And then these guys come out, like Stormzy. It's the biggest artist. And owns his own company. And he's incredibly successful. I suppose a bit like... I just suppose he works with people like Drake and people like that.
Okay.
But they're really, you know, he owns his own business.
Right.
You know.
But you do kind of have to take control, it sounds
well,
like.
Well, him and JME have signed Drake. Now.
Drake.
So Drake's on their record label in the UK.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Which is like, thinking that came out of, you know, 10 years of really hard, struggling kids with nothing to do.
Right.
Rapping in council flats and like making beats on PlayStations because they didn't have any gear.
Yeah, it's a really great success story.
Are you guys Drake fans?
No.
Like I do not like his music.
As soon as he sampled Timmy Thomas, let's get together and turn it into a booty call thing. I think you should be shot. Because if you're going to just disrespect something. You're going to disrespect a song so much about the world and how important that song is, and you're going to turn it into a booty call.
Yeah, just roll the misogyny steamroller over it.
Yeah, basically.
I didn't even know that. I put a blinder on to that guy. Okay. Gross. But good for the company who signed up. Yeah. You
know, that's the thing that really does my head in about kind of the music. Worldwide, it's just the amount of absolute free. It's called green class to be absolutely disgusting, homophobic, sexist. You know, just equally vile. And basically, the white middle class going to go, "Oh, it's fine. It's only it's like urban culture. You've got, you know, this is where they come from." That's
it's kind of amazing that can happen right now.
Yeah.
Everything exactly. Happening. Like,
I know, you know, like there's a couple of like female writers that are, you know, out there fighting for everything, like we all do. And but when it comes down to kind of misogynistic kind of hip hop music, they're like totally cool with it.
Yeah.
And you just go, oh right, okay, well when did that happen?
Right.
You know, so you choose misogyny, you know what I mean? It's like if it's rock, all of a sudden it's whoa, no, don't touch that. But if it's hip hop, it's like, you know, oh yeah, no, it's fine.
Yeah. Why do you think? Do you think that's because they're maybe scared of overstepping another cultural?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's kind of well known in the UK that is bad.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just like, oh no, that's urban. You know,
we're seeing this kind of like.
Those guys got to know as much as everyone else.
Right. People are frightened of it. That's what it boils down to. The middle-aged white men are too frightened of it to have a go at it.
But it's totally okay.
Because the middle-aged white men are in charge, that just silences it everywhere.
It's a shame it's white women as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay to, like, or we can't risk being racist, but we can be sexist. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
It's always been the case, isn't it?
But they're not being racist, are they?
No.
By calling them misogynist, they're not.
No. Because they're misogynist. Right. What do you think it'll take to break these trends?
A massive blinding flash of light towards that.
Yeah. A couple of Russian nukes would probably do it.
Asteroids.
Yeah.
An asteroid would be perfect because nobody can help it. I mean that sounds fairly negative, but it does. I think there's a combined response to it, but the trouble is with modern industry and clickbait and just celebrity kind of rap stories and stories about celebrities and fashion as well. Like still telling young girls that they've got to take certain slimming pills, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or, and, you know, all boys.
Until slimming pill makers stop paying them $850,000 for their Instagram post about it, it's going to carry on, isn't it?
Actually, those people having a responsibility to say no to those advances, those financial advances. I'm basically saying, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I've got enough money.
Right. But
do you think there'll ever be anybody, there'll always be somebody who will go, well, I'll take it.
Yeah, but actually, it won't be the people that they actually want. Like, you know, you get someone like Taylor Swift, whoever you feel about her, you know, it's like she's not part of that kind of, you know, I sell makeup, I sell kind of.
I mean,
don't you think they can make that, even though we can get the person they want, if you just get the next person that you want and then make
it. But it is, no, but it is.
Hang on a minute, because then you make it into something that everybody wants.
Because they do a deal with the media company that makes them bigger than the person that said no.
You know, social pressure does work because, you know, people are getting a lot more clued up and, you know, things like the cultural boycott of Israel. And noticing Lana Del Rey recently pulled out of massive shows there just due to fans saying.
There's a lot of money in there to make those shows happen.
Yeah, there's a hell of a lot of money to get Lana Del Rey over there, And she got enough pressure saying, look, you're very much legitimizing an incredibly corrupt and wrong government by doing this. You're playing into their hands. Please don't do it. And she didn't.
Good for her.
Yeah, good for her.
That's what you actually want is when an artist has actually got enough power to actually go, I don't actually need to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't.
I think even when they don't have the power, though, the trick is like saying no to those things and trusting that something good is going to come along. I know that's woo-woo, but...
No, but the thing is, if you're a band and you sign to a major label now, if you were a band, I'm talking about the group of people, the play instruments, I'm not talking about a pop project. It's that you will not get signed, you will not get that financial investment until I can see that it warrants, and you have the ability to communicate on a level to be open to financial input from outside sources.
Is that true in like the indie scene too?
No, it's not true.
Okay.
But I think that it's because no
I don't think any company in their right mind would actually sponsor an indie band.
Right.
Yeah. Boy, would you? Right. Or a rock band, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because there's no money, I guess.
Right.
But it's only going to be kind of by R&B eyes or pop eyes.
But I feel like it is indie music that gets into films and TV shows and stuff like that, right? That's kind of like along the same... Maybe it's not a company sponsoring an Instagram post, but it's a giant product, or well, if it's an indie film.
People, I mean, a lot of people live off, sings.
Yeah,
you
right.
Know, sing, lots and lots of bands live off sings. And I suppose if it's a film or TV, an indie band, as long as it's not kind of like a reenactment of, the Nazis, I'm going to kind of go, cool, we'll take $2,000.
Right.
Yeah.
No. That's the thing, for a lot of bands, we've got this, it's a crap film, you'd have no interest in it, we want to put your song in it, it's not offensive, we're going to give you £4,000, and if you're a small band, we can make 2 more records out of that £4,000, and it's silly to say no to, isn't it, at that level?
I'll tell you what, though.
What is £4,000? Sorry to interrupt. What is
£4,000
in?
It's 10 groats.
10 grand?
10 groats.
15.
10 cows. 14 sheep.
Okay.
20 chickens.
Got it. Okay. Got it. 30
mice.
We're going to be in restaurants.
20
so.
Chickens.
I don't know.
£4,000.
40 bricks.
Yeah, 40 bricks.
4,000 bricks.
4,000 bricks.
It's
probably $5,500.
Yeah, $5,700, I guess.
You can get an app on your phone for this.
You don't even need an app. You can just Google it.
I
won't remember any of this.
No, I know.
Yeah,
I
feel like
you're going to
stop doing
this.
You're
going to do records on $5,500 on 4,000 quid. You can make 2 records.
You can.
Yeah, if you're a small band, you can.
How many people are in a small band?
Well, it doesn't exist, so it's up to you, really, isn't it?
I don't know, how many's in your band?
Exactly.
I think we were saying it is that what would be interesting would be for interested brands. People that want to do something interesting, electric cars, or just something, and stop going down that route of kind of like saying, bullshit sings and find interesting bands and interesting music to kind of like partner up with. Right. Because you don't tell much for, an electronic artist that works on their own with a load of synths and laptop and,
like
for that company to fund them to write a sound. Yeah. And it would be uniquely interesting and it's kind of commerce supporting art.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it's the fault of the advertising artists, because you must have products that feel like they're breaking your ground as much as music is breaking your ground. But they don't seem to match. It's almost like they go into this with the music supervisor, and the music supervisor goes, hey, I've got this great new Sia remix. And you just kind of, and you just think, no. So it's about buyers taking interest in their terms. And we've seen it before. It's like, if you've got that uses Aphex Twin or something, it stands out like a mile.
Yeah.
And people remember it, it's like, fuck, that's cool. But for some reason, it's like this middle area of music supervisors and advertising agencies that are stopping the actual artists working with interesting bands.
Right.
Electricity companies. And, people use electricity for making music.
Yeah.
It should be that. You should have someone in the middle doing some interesting shit.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally do.
But instead, it always ends up old J.
Because at the end of the day, they're trying to sell stuff to people, and the mainstream is, they know what the mainstream likes, and they're not.
There's no risk.
Yeah.
That's not my opinion.
So, you said interesting music. How are you defining interesting music? It's...
anything you like, anything you think makes you feel like you're the first time you heard that music that made you want to get into it in the first place.
But that doesn't sound like everything else you've heard.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Like something that makes you stop and say, how the fuck did they do that? Exactly, like that.
And they did that, and it's also fucking memorable, and it evokes a feeling, because we're like, you know, oh, doing, making music, you're doing it with emotion, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, so that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
As opposed to talking about in advertising.
Yeah. So what does your songwriting and recording process look like?
Us three, like this. We're slightly further away from each other with instruments. That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
you guys
really
just like
it.
Play until
yeah,
something
yeah.
makes
get
sense.
Into a room and drink
I'm not
tea
a musician, I should say. So.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah, we do exactly that. We get in a room, play until something makes sense, record it, drink a lot of tea and coffee.
How long did this last album take to write and record?
About a year.
Oh, yeah.
But with a kind of a slow first half of the year, then a sped up second half of the year, because we kind of give ourselves like a mental goal.
It's like when you need a piss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By
yeah.
the back of the mind, you go, oh,
yeah.
That's
I'll,
right at the end.
Yeah, I'll be fine for a while.
That song was a full bladder.
Right.
Yeah. That's how we did this album. Is it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
like
needing
a lot of
like
full
bladders.
Speaking of which, I know you've been asked this before, so I'm sorry, but what's up with the name?
I don't know, what's up with it?
What's
it?
Anything?
Three chevrons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I what's heard you talk about the one before the rarities, like greater than greater than. Is this greater than greater than greater than?
Yeah, if you like. Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, like when you hear lyrics and you misinterpret them, you know, but it becomes like the favorite bit of your song, like Jimi Hendrix, excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Yeah.
For years I always thought, excuse me while I kiss this guy, you know, and I still sing that, because I really kiss that guy.
And the Dave Mackle I used to work with, Elvis, he misheard Return to Sender, and he always thought it was Return to Zender, which was the planet.
So there you go. And that's a lot more interesting, isn't it? So
interpretation.
Who's it for us to tell anybody what it's called? Just make it, call it whatever your favorite thing is.
Yeah.
That's why I never really ask bands about, and I know you guys don't have like so much lyrics, a lot of it's melodic, but I don't ever really ask bands about lyrical inspiration or lyrics in general, because I'm like, I know that I'm going to be listening to it through my own filter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Brilliant one the other day. Did you see the lyrics?
Yeah, you wrote them out. Yeah.
Yeah, that was completely wrong. But,
what are your songs?
Yeah. But then, to be honest, if he'd come up with better versions,
we'd
have
them. Yeah, we'll just have his from now on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah, we'll go with them from now
on.
So, do all of you come with ideas, at least, to the studio, when you're like, all right, we're going to put together a song?
Sometimes we haven't got any ideas, and then the ideas just happen.
Quite often there'll be a... when we're putting our equipment together, isn't it? Just like the first thing you do when you plug in and you test stuff out a bit,
yeah.
You start playing through it, and someone goes, well, remember that.
Right.
And that's how it'll come past. And, you know, it's always impossible to remember, because it was just... plug in something in and go.
Yeah, this is the first album where we've actually taken those two tracks where I've taken the stuff and played and then put it in the car and tried to write something, singing, driving around.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've done that and brought it back and made it into lyrics, where traditionally it would just kind of happen on the spot and then you would write. And then just do it live. But this is the when we fall and King of the Castle.
Like, what's the song RSI, the song on the album, that's got quite a songy vocal part, but on the recording of it you can hear the previous vocal idea because of the way we record. It's just in one room, everything bleeds into every microphone. Play it in live so you can hear, you know, Jeff's original vocal idea in the background that we just couldn't get out of it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, fine, sing the new one over it.
which is pretty unique to how most bands record these days, right?
It didn't used to be, though.
Right.
It was
yeah,
but it's the traditional.
Yeah.
It's traditional,
I
think.
Yeah.
It is actually.
Yeah,
that is it.
It's yeah.
actually very traditional.
Is it fun, the process? Do you guys ever want to throw things at each other?
No, we hate this. That's why we're still here.
Yeah.
yeah. No,
you know
is,
what I mean.
Yeah, we love it.
It is, but it gets frustrating because it gets frustrating for me because. I'm amazing, and these it gets frustrating because I'm not the most kind of agile drummer. So when you're trying to come up with something creative that's not just a normal beat, you want to play something interesting, but you've never played it before.
Yeah.
So what happens is that we're like, okay, let's record this one, and I'm like, I still don't know how to play the beat.
Yeah.
And So that becomes a little bit frustrating because we do a good take and I've fucked me up. So, but that's all of us, isn't it?
So one other thing I want to ask you guys before I ask you the things I ask everyone. Just to talk a little bit about, I know I saw some of your tweets, but in general, I know it's just Mental Health Day. I feel like every day should be Mental Health Day. And that's something else that we, I think it's something that people should be allowed to talk about every day.
Give them a proper day. Give them a day a week. But don't have people. Yeah. It'll be like Laguna Beach.
A lot of whining.
You know,
lots
of people going,
I'm
getting so hard today. Well, shut up. Get on with it.
They gave me whole milk in my latte.
Yeah.
They give me pure milk. They give me cow milk. I've come up in hives.
Fair enough. But what ways have you found to kind of to balance any mental health issues with creativity and like just living life without letting it?
It's a funny one because me and Will are actively will stand up and say we have mental health issues. Bill has many mental health issues, but he's yet to recognise them. He's a child to it's like anyone going to work in the office or going to work in a garage. You just try and do what you can do. But we're lucky because we actually enjoy our job and love doing it. So it's actually a huge relief and it's a pleasure. We're lots of people just don't have any life at all.
Yeah, a lot of people's clock in, clock out, right?
Yeah.
And just to support their families or whatever.
Hit the bottle, hit the weed, hit the family.
I don't gamble.
Well, you do play with us.
Whole life's a gamble. cool. Is there anything that you all wish that people like me would ask you in these interviews that they never do?
Would you like a pint?
My friend. My friend. That would always be. I've never had a journalist buy a drink.
Oh well, here comes the pressure on me.
Yeah,
shit.
You're gonna step up
just
now.
Saying.
No,
right. It's nice just to when you're doing it's just to chat with people. I mean, it happens so often you get someone that. Yeah, opens their notes app with a list of bullet pointed questions. And it's kind of like, regardless of how interesting what they ask is, it instantly becomes tedious, doesn't it?
Talking about music is like dancing about architecture.
Yes. It's a very good point. Sometimes it feels, most of the time it feels like
that.
Dancing about that.
I also wanted to ask what, if this is something you pay attention to, I'm sure you do, but what the, how the crowds with Beak are they much different from crowds you've experienced in the past? Like, does it feel like a different scene? No, just with Beak compared to like other stuff you've done.
It is. There's a definite Beak fan.
Mm-hmm.
All age groups, though.
Love that. And but yeah, like it feels like a big fan is very much like they really, really get it. They really, really understand it, and they really, really like it. They really like it.
When we first started, people used to say, where's the best place to put my bag? Where's the safest place to put the bag? And it would be the female toilets. Because no one would be going there.
Lots
of men in long dark coats. Fucking miserable. But having a nice time inside.
But over the years, that's completely changed.
I think I've noticed that the difference to this and other bands I've done is the crowds are, they're quite divided. Like a lot of bands, you play a gig and people turn up, it's like, I'm at a gig, it's fine, I'm watching some music and having a beer. And we seem to either get people, you know, everyone in our crowd is either silent or really like gobbing off to the person next to them. They either couldn't give two shits about us or love us. And there seems to be very little middle ground, which is different to most other bands I've been in.
Yeah, regarding the whole age group scene, I feel like that's one of the beauty of rock music to a certain extent. I feel like if it's a purely electronic show, I don't know if you're going to have like the older crowd. Maybe I'm wrong.
No,
I don't go to a ton of those shows.
I know you do in the UK.
Do you?
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. I've always been, because
you've been around for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
music in general.
Fair. I guess I'm more thinking of like... EDM, yeah, not electronic as in
there aren't very many techno dads, are there? Right. They're surfacing now because techno's old now, isn't it?
So the questions I ask everyone, which I've been thinking about retiring because I feel like all the answers are starting to sound the same, but at this point it's like a habit. What does the word process mean to you?
Tedium.
Yeah. It sounds like a big deal to get.
Process. Like.
I think of mechanically engineered meat. Processed meat.
But that's what it is. That's that process. And I think that's what we try and avoid, isn't it? Having the mechanically processed meat process to. I mean, that's kind of everything we were just saying about making music. Let's try and not stick to this process and the rules. Just meat. It's just meat. It's just Frankfurters. Yeah.
If you were to give a piece of advice to a blossoming musician, let's say someone who's wants to do things their way, wants to not produce pop music, but also wants to like make a living off of it, what would you tell them?
Don't worry about making a living off it. Do what you want to do and don't listen to everyone. Don't bother tuning your guitar if you think it sounds better out of tune. Don't follow all the rules that everyone's laid down.
Don't listen to anyone ever. No, don't listen to anyone who doesn't sound off. If you believe in someone, you've got respect for them and listen to parts of what they actually believe in. Just because someone's actually had some experience in the music industry at some point doesn't mean it just doesn't mean shit. You're more likely to get that advice.
I have caught myself doing that even with podcasting. If I like find a podcast that's more successful than mine and listen to it, and I'll like try to maybe adapt my intro to how they do it, and I'm like,
yeah, don't do that.
No, that's not me.
Yeah, what you should do is not do that.
Like not like no a girly
ever,
girl.
No one's ever said I heard this really interesting podcast that was exactly like this other bigger podcast.
Right. Yeah. And lastly, what's something you're excited about today?
Play it.
Sure.
Yeah. Cool. It's the fun bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sure, that's.
Cool. Well, thank you all.
No, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now you have to buy us a pint, right?
Yep.